Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. I'm with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for... It's Tuesday, November 7th, 2023. Hey, Dave.
Hello, Melody, and happy Election Day.
Oh, boy, oh, boy.
It's true, all across the country. Hey, did you know in 1982, the Massachusetts seat of then Speaker of the House Tip O'Neill was challenged by no-name lawyer Frank McNamara? Enter O'Neill's chief of staff, Chris Matthews, who adopted his boss's iconic and winning campaign strategy. Well, McNamara had financed most of his campaign with money from oil interests from Oklahoma and Texas. Matthews had O'Neill play up those connections in the media by passing out literature highlighting McNamara's fundraising in those states. Well, later during the campaign, O'Neill introduced a $1 billion jobs bill. House Republican leader Bob Michael of Peoria, Illinois, opposed the bill, but O'Neill delivered an address that was broadcast in Peoria showing how many infrastructure problems in Peoria would be fixed by the bill. Years later, Matthews wrote that by hitting his rival where he lived, O'Neill translated a wholesale debate over national economic policy to the local retail level. Thus, the term all politics is local was raised to a whole new level. Well, obviously, that's largely changed today, where it seems every stinking local political campaign depends on fundraising from every stinking little corner of the nation. Thus, politics is hardly local anymore. That's another story, right?
Yeah, that's another story, you know. And it is sad, you know, to think we would have, you know, a great process, a great government if they eliminated all of these campaign, you know, all these political campaign funds and PACs and, you know, and really went back to keeping it local. Boy, what a different world. What a different country we probably would have. A much better one, I would think.
Gosh. So. I can't tell you how many. I bet you I've had no exaggeration, I bet you close to 50 emails and texts from candidates as far away as California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, asking for $3, $5, $10.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yep.
I'm a Pennsylvanian. I'm from a small town of 3,000 people. Give me a break.
Oh, I know. And you know what? But those $3 and $5, they add up. You know, with the internet, that's, well, with, I mean, they've been doing it for how long? Look how much they can accumulate through all of those little ads, and someone is feeling weak or gets scammed or whatever, you know, it's, well, they shouldn't allow fundraising on the computer. They shouldn't be allowed to send emails and so forth. It should be done the old fashioned way. But anyway, can't solve that problem today, but,
well, the average congressman and senator now spends close to 50% of their time in Washington fundraising.
I've heard it's a lot higher than that.
Well, it probably is.
You know, closer to 70%. And that's how they get all these little positions and so forth, the speaker. That's how much they can raise. You know, how much, you know, they can raise on the telephone. It's really disgusting. And then they take our things like our budget and everything else down to the wire. You know, well, got off the phone, you know, calling around and work once in a while. It really is pathetic. It really is. But
10
anyway,
days away from another government shutdown.
Let's go ahead and talk about gold today. We had another pullback today in gold. Not bad. $9. We're still at $1,969. Silver was down 39 cents, $22.71. Platinum was down 14 at 900. Palladium down 47 at 1,083. You got the USDX today. That was stronger by 0.28 at 105.53. Crude oil got hammered. Crude oil got hammered today. $3.50. 77.41. And the paper markets today, you have a green day. You've got the Dow up 56 points, S&P up 12, and the NASDAQ just shy of 1% at 13,639. European markets, Germany was the only one that was positive. It was up a whole 16 points. All the other ones in Europe were, I mean, they were down, but barely. A couple points here, a couple points there. Asian markets, a little bit of a different story. You had the Hang Seng, they were down almost 1.75%. The Nikkei was down a little over 1.25, which was 436 points. And Shanghai was down just a point, so not too bad in China. 10-year yield, 4.575. That was down also. And let's go to my natural gas. That is down 3.173. It was shy of being down of 3%, so it's 3.173. So, you know, we're going to talk about a lot of things they're talking about. I think you're going to talk about the credit card debt, you know, in the last segment. Is that correct, Dave?
It is true.
That is true? Okay. And I'll tell you what, some of these reports, you're going to talk about rice, about the shortage of rice. We're going to talk about that. But also, I mean, I think it was wheat because of the Mississippi. I mean, things are not good. Things are not good out there. So we did talk about election, you know, so I don't know if there's a whole lot. Is there really anything really interested in there? I think Mississippi Republican Governor Tate Reeves, he's looking to seeking reelection against a cousin of rock and roll legend Elvis Presley. And Ohio voters, they're going to decide on some amendments supported by abortion rights groups. It's pretty much, you know, the same. I don't know if there's any big races. I think is in Virginia, a big one, Dave. I'm not sure.
Oh yeah, they're control of both chambers there. The state legislature up for grabs. Republicans holding a narrow majority in the state house. Democrats leading the state senate. Either or both chambers could flip, they say, and possibly give Republicans full control of the state government, and that would clear the way for their Republican governor, Glenn Youngkin, to implement a ban on abortions after 15 weeks. He supports exceptions for rape, incest, and when the mother's life is endangered. You got marquee races in Kentucky, Ohio, and Virginia as well. And of course, there are thousands of municipal, school board, county council, and judicial contests all across the country. Now, if you're interested in voting but don't know where you vote or how late your polling place is open, you can always, if you have access to a computer, go to www.vote.org, and you'll be able to find out. A very powerful website.
Well, you know, there's always these discussions about recessions, and, you know, we've been talking about, you know, being partially in a recession, like the housing and so forth, but I think the recession we're going to be heading into is going to be the granddaddy of all recessions. And it was interesting, I saw, is it Tim Scott, the senator, talking about how the Fed has gone totally, you know, that they're in so much trouble because they've taken us down this path of these low rates and all the amount of debt that they're holding. And, you know, it's a balance that, you know, we don't believe that they can balance for very much longer. And, you know, instead of letting things happen and you know, where there's an action, there's a reaction, let those reactions happen to where reality takes hold. And we weather through that, even though the reality was tough for people, at least it was reality and not something that was made up and promoted by excess programs and money being created and so forth, only to hurt the taxpayers and the citizens of this nation ultimately. So, but there's more and more people coming out that the probability of a recession hit its highest level when compared to the percentage of banks tightening their lending standards for loans. And, of course, you know, this is being reported by the too big to fail Deutsche Bank. The senior loan officer opinion survey on bank lending practices, known as SLOOS, showed that the U.S. banking lending standards have tightened across the board to levels seen when recessions are imminent or already happening. This chart shows that as almost 30% of banks tighten their standards on small firm C&I loans, the probability of a U.S. recession in the next 0 to 12 months jumps to almost 90%. Bankers cited an uncertain economic outlook. You have a reduced tolerance for risk. You have a deterioration in the credit quality of loans. You have a reduction in collateral values and rising fund costs as these primary catalysts for a tightening of lending standards during this period covered. And on loans to businesses, well, survey respondents on balance reported tighter standards and weaker demand for commercial and industrial, which is the C&I loans, to firms of all sizes over the third quarter. And Dave, this recession, it isn't going to be the one like we had in 2020, where it was 1 month long.
Quote unquote.
Yeah.
Well, the banks also reported these tighter standards and weaker demand for all commercial real estate loan categories. Now, in loans to households, banks reported that lending standards tightened across all categories of residential real estate loans other than government residential mortgages, for which standards remain basically unchanged. Meanwhile, demand weakened for all residential loan categories. In addition, banks reported tighter standards and weaker demand for home equity lines of credit. Plus, for credit card, auto, and other consumer loans, standards reportedly tightened and demand weakened as well. In addition, banks reported that broadly they were less likely to approve loans to borrowers with credit scores between 620 and 680 than they had at the start of this year. And listen to this. They also reported an increased willingness to approve credit card loan applications and a willingness to approve auto loan applications for borrowers with FICO scores of 720 or greater. So, as Melody mentioned, I'll be talking more about credit card debt increasing even further in today's third segment.
Yeah, and I also read today that for this country to service their debt has gone over $1 trillion.
Yep.
Servicing our debt over $1 trillion. So, but there's people who, and I get it, and I, you know, you have all of these Fed people, all these Fed governors that, you know, think that things are great. And of course they have to say that. You know, they're the cheerleaders for, you know, because you know what? They'd end up in jail if they ever told people the real condition of everything and what they've done. Well, our debt to serve, just to service our debt is over $1 trillion. That's not going to go down. So you got these yahoos, the Fed board's Governor Lisa Cook. She said, in her view, our financial system is substantially more resilient than it was in the 2000s. Jesus. Really?
Jesus.
I mean, make the comparison. In the banking industry, the deposit volatility we saw earlier this year has abated. Really? I've been telling you guys about how the ACHs globally haven't been able to be processed.
I'll be curious to see how Pam and Russ Martins at Wall Street on Parade react to that. They have some incredibly alarming statistics about the too big to fails deposit numbers.
And it's something you haven't heard about. So to say that, you know, banks are, you know, that the financial system is more resilient than it was in 2000. Are you kidding me? And we still really haven't found out why we have that problem that's gone on. I haven't checked today and I haven't received, if I've received any notices today, I missed them, whether the problem has been fixed. But as of yesterday, the problem wasn't fixed. So, but anyway, so maybe, perhaps Lisa hasn't been watching fourth quarter earnings projections that, according to FactSet, has gone from 8.3% just a few weeks ago to just 3.9%. Or maybe Lisa Cook hadn't yet seen the Fed's October SLOOS report that offered very little cheer about, a little to cheer about for those hoping to avoid a contraction in economic activity or a slowdown in velocity. Oh yeah, Dave, maybe she just missed the WeWork news.
Bankruptcy.
Yeah, and you've got, you know, a lot of those banks, those too big to fail banks for WeWorks, they're just writing off billions of dollars of debt. Like, it's nothing. It's just, Dave. And I get why they have to say this. They can't create a panic because they don't want you to go in and take your money out of the bank because they don't have enough there to cover it. If, you know, you had a sudden bank run, they don't have these banks don't have enough money. But it's just digits for the most part. But anyway, I used to like Austin Goolsbee, but he kind of, well, once he started working for the Fed, then he changed, you know. He used to come out with some good stuff, but not anymore. And he thinks that a soft landing is still on the table.
Oh, my God. talking about a golden path is still possible. And that he's already, he's talking, the tense he's using, that we got inflation down without a recession.
That's the funniest part of it.
Come on, Austin, wake up.
We'll be right back. I hear the music. That means you have to hear some messages. Stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And we're just finishing up about, the two Feds, one, the Chicago Fed, Austin Goolsbee, and the Lisa, the Fed Board Governor, Lisa Cook, and their happy place of very little recession or none and whatsoever. Did you want to add any more to that, Dave?
Please, no.
Come on.
No, we must move on.
Okay.
I'm in a relatively good place at the moment.
Well, we did see gold fall to a 2-week low today, of course, on the firmer dollar, and the threat of World War III and so forth doesn't even weigh into it anymore. So it's a great buying opportunity. Gold futures were holding at 1970, and the dollar index rose 0.5 percentage point, making bullion more expensive for overseas buyers. So the gold market is waiting for further dovish signals from the Fed before its rally can continue, or any other type of geopolitical situation around the world, which is tons of them just waiting to happen. And gold prices were consolidating after slipping into the overbought territory, and we did see gold gain more than 7% in October. So that was a good deal. That was on some safe haven demand, Dave.
Yeah, now we're waiting for more Fed speak from Chair Powell tomorrow and Thursday. Investors see a 90% chance of Fed's leaving rates alone in December. Little less, but roughly the same in January. And about 80% seeing a chance of a cut by June next year, according to the CME Group's Fed Watch tool. But Minneapolis Fed Prez, Neil Kashkari, says the Fed likely has a little more work ahead of it to control inflation. I mean, with the consensus of a Fed pause so broad, and even with so many members of the FOMC talking in terms, general terms, granted, but in, you know, talking about in roundabout ways of leaving things alone. I think Kashkari is in a minority. Now, again, it's month to month or 6 weeks to 6 weeks. And, you know, this Fed being data driven as it is, you know, it all depends on all these reports that come out, particularly about inflation, but also about jobs. So we'll have to wait and see. But I'd be very surprised if we see any more increases now, unless we see a big spike in particularly core PCE over the next couple of months. But, I mean, you never know, right?
You never know.
Yes.
You never anyway. Know. Trade deficits expand in September on the back of a larger rise in imports than exports. Of course, that kind of makes a little sense, a little bit of sense. The overall trade gap for the world's biggest economy broadened more than expected of $61 billion, up from a revised $58 billion in August. Imports picked up 2.7% to $322 billion. Exports grew 2.2%. You know, of course, we know consumer spending, you know, that's what we're going to have. What else in there, Dave? Anything?
No, not really. Again, you know, September imports boosted by consumer goods like cell phones and household goods, as well as vehicles and auto parts. That's about it. U.S. goods deficit with China grew to $24.1 billion.
All right. Well, this little bit of information probably affects every listener out there. Social Security beneficiaries will soon get notices showing exactly how much money to expect in their monthly checks for next year, 2024. Recipients will get a 3.2 boost to their benefits starting in January with the 2024 annual cost of living adjustment. Retirement benefits are expected to go up by more than $50 per month on average. So there's one factor that will affect exactly how much beneficiaries receive in their Medicare Part B premium. Now that is usually deducted from your Social Security checks. Medicare Part B serves as medical insurance and covers doctors and other provider services, outpatient care, home health care, durable medical equipment, and even some preventive services. And I love Medicare. I know I'm only 39, but I love Medicare.
You're a lucky gal.
I know. Let's see. So,
sorry, I didn't mean to make you speechless.
Yeah, I know. Standard monthly premiums are slated to rise to almost $10 per month to 174 $1,000 in 2024 from $164 per month this year. People with higher incomes will pay more as a result of what is called income-related monthly adjustments. So if you're single and make $103,000 or less, or if you're married and make $206,000 or less, your premium's going to be $174.90. If you're single and you make between $161,000 and $193,000, or if you're married and you make between $322,000 and $386,000, your premium's going to be $454. And it just goes on. I think all those numbers get a little confusing. If you're single and you make more than $500,000, or if you're married and make more than $750,000, your premium will be $594. My point is, if you're making $750,000, you know, why are you even on Medicare? You know,
hey, that's an interesting.
That's what I, you know.
It's an interesting, interesting point.
Medicare, that should have some sort of a
means testing. You don't means test.
They should.
Social Security and.
They should. They should do everything. Yep.
Well, you generally can have your Medicare Part B premiums adjusted, with one exception. If something has materially changed in your situation, you can appeal your premium. That applies to events that have caused your income to go down since 2022, such as a divorce, the death of a spouse, the loss of a pension, or you started retirement. You may file an appeal once you receive your benefit notice for 2024. Medicare Part B premiums are based on beneficiaries' modified adjusted gross income from 2 years prior. Therefore, your 2024 Part B premiums are based on your 2022 federal tax returns. That includes adjusted gross income, your wages, retirement distributions, investment income, capital gains, rental income, and your applicable Social Security benefits, as well as tax-exempt interest. If you have municipal bond interest that you don't pay federal taxes on because it's exempt, that can still prompt higher Medicare Part B premiums. Managing the Part B premium costs can be tricky, because even just $1 in additional income could push you into a higher tax bracket if you are close to these thresholds. Certain tax management strategies, such as Roth individual retirement account conversions, will trigger higher taxable income for the year the transaction was completed. Consequently, that may also result in higher Medicare Part B premium. So, you know, if you think you might be close to the thresholds, seeing a certified financial planner may not be such a bad idea.
I mentioned earlier about rice and wheat, you know, and rice is, I mean, it's a crucial staple for over half of the global population. And now everyone is bracing for a very significant shortage, the most in 20 years. India's export ban on rice is reverberating through the global rice markets, of course, threatening, you know, food security if developing nations cannot afford or access rice. Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs Peter Bachman said the only shortage out there right now would really be India's plain white long grain, poor quality rice that they ship to a lot of countries throughout Africa and Southeast Asia. And when they slap a ban in place, that impacted most, or those developing countries, the hardest, and of course the first. India first banned exports of broken rice and imposed a 20% duty on exports of some rice varieties back in September of 2022. Then this year, July of 2023, India went and banned exports of its plain white long grain rice. And, you know, India has always been such a poor country that they've suffered from shortages of food in a major way. And so there's an understandable desire to ensure appropriate availability of staple foods like rice within the country. And so I don't know, Dave. That's a lot.
That is a lot. I didn't know this. India's rice exports make up 40% of the global market.
Wow.
So any export bans quickly influence global prices. Rice prices spiked almost 20%, hitting the highest in almost 12 years. That's according to the International Food Policy Research Institute. Bachman said India is trying to secure enough rice in their domestic market so the prices will drop for consumers. U.S. rice farmers face the same volatile prices. Mike Klein, who's he works as a VP at USA Rice, says our farmers go up against any rice farmer, but they can't compete with foreign governments. Now, Congress passed $250 million in supplemental funding. Rice farms struggle to stay profitable as global rice prices mismatched with rising input costs. So I guess our government helps out our rice farmers with significant aid, prevents farmers from falling through the cracks.
Mm. Well,
crazy,
you know,
crazy things going on out there.
Well, the U.S. wheat exports plunge as the Mississippi River is drying up.
Oh,
American,
wow.
Yeah, American wheat shipments dropped to the lowest ever, hampered by a shrinking Mississippi and competition from ample global grain supplies.
Wow. Wasn't Are those exports?
Drought. Let's see. Export inspections of American wheat in the week ending November 2nd totaled only 71,000 metric tons.
Wow.
With some wheat shipped from Duluth, Minnesota through the Great Lakes, but virtually nothing on the Mississippi River, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. This is the smallest total on record in weekly USDA data going back to 1983.
Wow.
So you have, and I need to follow up on this too, because on the Mississippi, there was a big concerns and for New Orleans, where they were concerned that the salt, the Mississippi wasn't keeping the salt from the Gulf out of their water systems.
Oh, okay.
Because the Mississippi was drying up so much that the Gulf salt water was moving up the Mississippi.
I gotcha.
Uh-huh. And therefore, there would be areas that had no drinking water, because it was salt.
So the irrigation.
Yeah, I mean.
Irrigation was, I guess, they couldn't irrigate.
They couldn't do
that.
The
wheat fields. Oh, wow.
So I don't know if. It was when I read that article, it's probably at least a month ago. It was at a critical time. They would say it would, in a couple of weeks, if they didn't get rain and so forth, that it was a major problem. And then what salt does to pipes. Once it gets in there, yeah. So I'll follow up on that and report that later on. So
wow, that's sounds. Critical mass.
But what's interesting with the Ukraine war, didn't they make some kind of deal for grain to get it out of?
Well, yeah, but then Russia reneged at one point, and interfered with a huge shipment. Now, apparently, the UN had interceded, and I thought I remembered that Russia had agreed to back away, but I don't remember how and to what extent that got resolved.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting though, because now you have, you know, a shortage of wheat there and a shortage of wheat coming out of the U.S. and again, it's, you know, the world lives on wheat and rice. So
yeah, boy, that's
there's going to be a lot of various factor. Yeah. So again, prices are not going down. So
yeah, just in terms of world hunger.
Mm-hmm. I hear the music. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me. Come on, babe, don't say babe. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up, I'm climbing in. So take it easy.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of other client business this final segment. Call her at 1-800-375-4188. As promised, Americans now owe $1.08 trillion on their credit cards. That's according to a new report on household debt from the New York Fed. Credit card balances spiked by $154 billion year over year, notching the largest increase since 1999. According to Dong Hoon Lee, the New York Fed's economic research advisor, credit card balances experienced a large jump in the third quarter, consistent with strong consumer spending and real GDP growth. Credit card delinquency rates also rose across the board, but especially among millennials, borrowers between the ages of 30 and 39 who are burdened by high levels of student loan debt. With most people feeling strained by higher prices, particularly for food, gas, and housing, more cardholders are carrying debt from month to month or failing falling behind on payments, and a greater percentage of balances are going more than 180 days delinquent. That's according to a separate report from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Nearly one-tenth of credit card users find themselves in persistent debt, where they're charged more in interest and fees each year than they pay toward the principal, a pattern that's increasingly difficult to break. That's, again, according to the CFPB. Ted Rossman says it's a big deal. Your credit card is probably your highest cost debt by a wide margin. Credit card rates were already high, but have recently spiked along with the Fed's string of 11 rate hikes, including four in 2023. Since most credit cards have a variable rate, there's a direct connection to the Fed's benchmark. As the Fed funds rate rose, the prime rate did as well, and credit card rates followed suit. In fact, the annual percentage rate on credit cards averages now more than 20%, also an all-time high. Despite the steep costs, consumers often turn to their credit cards, in part because they are more accessible than any other type of loans. That's according to Matt Schultz, chief credit analyst at LendingTree. He says that comes at the expense of other long-term financial goals. He says that's money that doesn't go to a college fund or down payment on a home or the purchase of a Roth IRA. Recently, most Americans benefited from a few government-supplied safety nets, most notably the large injection of stimulus money during the pandemic. That left many households sitting on a stockpile of cash that enabled some cardholders to keep their credit card balances in check. But that cash reserve is largely gone after consumers gradually spent down their excess savings from the COVID years. Now, according to Howard Dvorkin, a certified public accountant who chairs Debt.com, consumers are maintaining and supporting their lifestyles using credit card debt. Still, consumer credit scores have remained surprisingly high, helped by a strong labor market and cooling inflation, along with the removal of certain medical collections data from consumer credit files. And if you're carrying a balance, well, try calling your credit card issuer to ask for a lower rate. Or consolidate, pay off high-interest credit cards with a lower-interest home equity loan or a personal loan, or switch to an interest-free balance transfer credit card. To optimize the benefits of a credit card, consumers should regularly compare credit card offers. Pay as much of your balance as you can, and avoid paying your bill late, whatever you do. Any credit card holder who finds yourself in financial stress should always contact your card issuer to make them aware of your situation. You may be eligible for some relief or assistance depending on your individual circumstances. Most importantly, if you're not in debt, don't go into it. Axios's Felix Salmon writes today, "Pity anyone who ever had to work for Ray Dalio." That's the main message of The Fund. Rob Copeland's definitive history published today of Bridgewater, the hedge fund that was founded by Dalio and rose to become the largest in the world. Now, beyond the fact that Copeland depicts Bridgewater as a terrible place to work, the big question is whether the psychological torture inflicted by Dalio was in any way necessary for the fund's investment return. Well, according to the book, the answer seems to be a resounding no. For the record, Dalio posted his response to the book on LinkedIn, calling it another one of those sensational and inaccurate tabloid books written to sell books to people who like gossip. Well, Copeland said the metastasization and weaponization of the principles, not investing, appears to have been Ray's main focus for the past decade or so. the principles or Dalio's attempts to codify Bridgewater's rules and procedures and to become a global thought leader in the process. Felix says Copeland has done a magnificent job reporting what happens inside Bridgewater, almost none of which seems to be related either to investing the fund's money or even raising new funds from investors. One fun fact not previously reported, Bridgewater briefly employed Larry Culp between his stints running Danaher and GE. Culp was reportedly fired in late 2015 for speaking a little too frankly to Dalio. Bridgewater's investment technique, however, remains a mystery, according to Salmon. Back in 2016, Bloomberg's Matt Levine wrote, "One stylized model for thinking about Bridgewater is that it is run by the computer with absolute logic and efficiency. In this model, the computer's main problem is keeping the 1,500 human employees busy so that they don't interfere with its perfect rationality." But according to Copeland, there's no indication that Bridgewater uses ultra-sophisticated quantitative techniques to invest its money a la Rentec. Bridgewater hired legendary AI computer scientist David Ferrucci, for instance, who was under the impression that he would be working on economic modeling. Instead, he was put to work developing an app version of Dalio's principles and never worked on investing at all. Apparently, Dalio seems to have been very good at hiring strippers, reducing employees to tears, inducing suicidal thoughts, and reciting filthy poems, according to Copeland. Dalio was also effective at raising well over $100 billion of capital and was arguably the first person to try to create a hedge fund that focused more on reducing risk than on maximizing returns. How he invested that capital, however, well, that remains a big unknown. Interesting. Hey, our latest American Survival newsletter hit the streets last evening. It features Melody's weekly recap of the financial markets. Want to know what rose and fell the most last week? Well, subscribe to our newsletter. By the way, the NASDAQ rose 6.6%. That was the best equity market result. WTI, domestic crude oil, fell 5.9%. That was the worst market outcome, we reported. Plus, there's Doug Nolan's weekly credit bubble bulletin blog on Squeezeville and Apothecary Herbs, Wendy Wilson's Food for Thought on Aging. And I have a piece on the labor market. Yes, fall. Fall has finally brought some chill to the labor market. Axios' Neil Irwin writes that for months, the vibes, that is, anecdotes, CEO and consumer sentiment surveys and whatnot, have pointed to a slowdown in the labor market. The official data, especially on growth and employer payrolls, that's been another story. But in October, they finally joined together. And now, with last Friday's latest job numbers, Irwin says there's little doubt that the labor market is shifting into a lower gear. And that, he adds, should diminish inflation pressures and make the Fed more confident it's done raising rates. He notes in particular the evidence of a slowdown present across all facets of the economy. Job gains, revisions to previous months, the survey of households, wage growth, the average work week, and whatnot. The Labor Department reported that employers added 150,000 jobs in October, down from a revised 297,000 in September. That number was pulled down by a decline of 33,000 auto manufacturing jobs because of the auto workers' strike that's now been essentially resolved. The headline unemployment rate did tick up to 3.9%, the highest in almost 2 years, and up half a percentage point from its multi-decade low of 3.4 earlier this year. Now, the broader and more accurate U6 measure of unemployment that counts discouraged job seekers and people working part-time who want full-time work rose to 7.2% from 7% in September and from 6.5% at the end of last year. Revisions to August and September numbers reduced those counts by a combined 101,000, suggesting job creation in late summer was not as rip-roaring as earlier estimated. ZipRecruiter's chief economist, Julia Pollack, said the decline in these top-line indicators partly explains why job seekers and new hires are feeling more stressed out than they have in over a year. All of the key indicators, she adds, suggest that the economy is cooling and the labor market is slackening. Pardon me. Perhaps more importantly, she added, the decline in real disposable income last month suggests that consumer spending could cool further in the coming months, putting yet more downward pressure on the labor market. If the jobless rate rises just another couple of ticks and stays there, Irwin says it will invoke the SOM rule, a useful rule of thumb indicator that a recession is underway. When the three-month average of the jobless rates is half a percentage point above its recent low, it's been a precise recession signal in the past. Right now, it stands at 0.33. The numbers typically add up to a sweet spot for the Fed. So if data like this keep inching up, the Fed likely will be done with interest rate increases. Irwin characterizes the numbers as pointing to a labor market remaining strong by most historical standards, yet not in a zone that would necessarily fuel inflation. He notes that average hourly earnings rose a mere 0.2% and were up 4.1% over the last 12 months, the lowest since May 2021. Over the last 3 months, earnings have risen at a 3.2% annual rate, well within the range consistent with the Fed's 2% inflation target. Financial markets reacted to the job reports accordingly, with two-year Treasury yields taking a nosedive as traders priced in lower odds of further rate hikes and higher odds of rate cuts next year. The 10-year yield plunged even more to 5.454% in early trading, continuing a reversal of the surge that had pushed that rate over 5% less than 3 weeks ago. But in a less welcome turn of events for the Fed, the labor force shrunk by 201,000. Ironically, Fed Chair Jerome Powell emphasized that an expanding labor force created supply-side improvement that was helping keep inflation in check despite strong growth. Well, 1 month's move could be statistical noise, but for October at least, it went in the wrong direction. PIMCO economist Tiffany Wilding said, "We think policymakers will be paying close attention to the supply-side aspect of next month's report to help determine whether supply-side expansion will continue to be disinflationary." Bottom line, Irwin believes the vibes were right and the earlier data was wrong. This is a job market that's finally lost steam, with the open question being whether there is significantly more damage yet to come. My own take, well, the next few months will tell. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to your loyal listeners for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. If you haven't voted yet, you still have a couple of hours to do so. Please be safe out there. Again, if you don't know where you're going, if you don't know when your polling place closes, go to www.vote.org. Have a good evening. Take care. Bye-bye. And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy